This podcast of the Radio Cafe comes to you via radiocafe.org, where you can find more information and many other podcasts. Technical support comes from Studio X, providing website design, hosting, e-commerce, and social media marketing, serving Santa Fe to the world since 1994. Find out more at studiox.com. I'm delighted now to welcome back to the Radio Cafe Peter Miller. He's director of the film Projections of America, which screens as part of the Santa Fe Film Festival on Saturday, the 5th of December at 4 o'clock at the CCA. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
It's great to be back.
Now, this is a set of films by somebody named Robert Riskin, who was already an amazing filmmaker in his own right. Tell us about Robert Riskin and how this project came to be.
Robert Riskin was one of the great Hollywood screenwriters. He wrote many of the great scripts for Frank Capra's famous movies of the 1930s, It Happened One Night, Meet John Doe, Mr. Deeds Goes to Town, and a whole bunch of others. As the Second World War was getting started, he felt compelled to turn his talents towards helping with the war effort, and he oversaw this series of 26 short documentaries about America to be shown to newly liberated audiences overseas. His goal was to make propaganda films, but they were unlike any propaganda films that I've ever seen. They were gentle, nuanced films trying to explain who we are as Americans and doing it from a politically progressive point of view, kind of showing America to be a complex, diverse, and democratic place, projecting in some ways an ideal version of what America could be. And these 26 films were seen by millions of people around the world, and that's the subject of my movie, is this Robert Riskin's journey in making these, getting them seen, and what they tell us about how we should understand our country.
Who was the target audience for these films? I mean, why were they making films for people in other parts of the world?
Well, America, before we entered the war, was a fairly isolated place. A lot of people had no idea who we were, and if they knew who we were, it was from Hollywood movies, you know, showing gangsters and cowboys and all sorts of crazy stuff that didn't really reflect a vision of what America was. And we were going to be going into countries and liberating. You know, we'll go into France on D-Day and liberate Western Europe along with other allies. People have no idea who we are. So we show up, and the locals think we're another occupying army. They've had years of Nazi occupation. And the vision that Robert Riskin and his filmmaking team had was, let's explain to the people who we are going to be living with, who we are, what we're about, and give them a sense of that we are not another occupying army. We are people who are on your side. And the goal was not to make a hard-hitting, bash you over the head, we are powerful and strong and have lots of tanks and planes, but rather we are, we're people like you.
It's interesting because the term propaganda of truth was used. When you watched these films in order to make your documentary about them, did they feel true to you?
You know, I was really surprised by how great these films were. And no one's ever seen these. These are films that have disappeared from view. They haven't been seen for 70 years, many of them. And we found them in government archives. And I looked at these old films, and some of them are, made in a older style of filmmaking that we're not used to, but some of them really moved me. There's a film called The Cummington Story, about a little town in New England where refugees are coming from overseas during the war, and the people of the town behave badly. The refugees arrive, and the people of the town turn their back on them. They don't want to talk to them. They don't want to welcome them to their little village. And over the course of a 20-minute film, we see how those barriers break down. We see that the people of this little town recognize the humanity of the refugees, which is something we could think about right now, and welcome them in and realize, these are people who are like us. Here's a propaganda film that shows America not in its best light, but shows how people can change. And so in a way, it doesn't feel like propaganda, and it does feel like real life.
Yeah, I mean, that one was particularly relevant today when we've got all these refugee situations and the kind of sort of awful talk that's going on about whether or not we should accept refugees in our own country.
Suddenly this film from 1943 becomes very relevant. You know, here you've got people who don't want to be bothered with the troubles of the world, and right now we're in a miserable situation where people are escaping from horrors, and we should be reflecting America's best values. We should be welcoming people in and saying this is a country that's built on, you know, refugees, and we're not doing that, and it's enough, and there are people out there who are spouting off about this in troubling ways that we shouldn't be doing. One of the things about this series of movies is that they encourage people they encourage America to reflect its best values and who we really ought to be, and that's something which is surprising in a propaganda effort. I mean, these films weren't meant for the U.S. They weren't meant for American audiences, but American audiences would do really well to watch them because they really are about who we could be, not just who we are, but what the best ideals of this country could reflect.
Now, this was under the Franklin Delano Roosevelt administration, and they were perceived at the time by Republicans in the government as being too liberal, and I guess, what was it? Part of the program was shut down, but the overseas part remained?
Yeah, I mean, this is the culture wars that we have lived through, where Congress is nervous about presenting, you know, media that they don't agree with, was going on in the 1940s. There was a Republican majority in the Senate, and they didn't want to have this, what they perceived to be Franklin Roosevelt's kind of mouthpiece of propaganda, presenting his vision of what America was about, and they slashed the funding for this Projections of America program, rather for the Office of War Information's film programs, but the Projections of America films, which were meant for overseas audiences, somehow were spared because they were being shown overseas. They weren't being shown here, so they didn't affect domestic politics, and happily they continued through the rest of the war.
Now, there were amazing filmmaking talents brought to bear on this. I mean, the best minds and creative souls in Hollywood, a lot of them worked on this.
I mean, you had Joseph von Sternberg making films, John Houseman. You had Philip Dunn, who was a screenwriter who had written How Green Is My Valley and The Last of the Mohicans. You know, Robert Riskin himself was a Academy Award-winning screenwriter from Hollywood, and they teamed up with these documentary people. And so here, me as a documentary filmmaker, I'm like, wow, this is amazing. You've got the best talent from Hollywood and the best talent from the documentary community teaming up to do something urgent. And in the course of a couple of years, they created 26 really magnificent films. There's one of the film historians in the movie says that, you know, there's never been a project like this that brought together so much talent in such a short amount of time to make so many films. And the shame of it is that no one knows anything about these films. This series of films disappeared and was not heard from in some ways, because by the end of the war, with a changing political climate, as the Cold War kicked in, you had this kind of storytelling didn't fit with America's political vision. But man, the work that was created was beautiful. It was great filmmaking, and it mattered.
Now, tell us some of the countries where these films were seen and what effect they had. I mean, were these subtitled in English with subtitles? Were they translated and redubbed into other languages?
The films were all translated and dubbed into dozens of languages, and they were shown all over Europe, of course, in France, and by the end of the war in Germany, and in Holland and Belgium and Spain and Italy, and some of the films were designed with particular audiences in mind. So there's a great film made about the conductor Toscanini, which was finished in time for the liberation of Rome, where it was shown in Italy, and it really meant a great deal to Italian audiences. The films were shown in Asia, they were shown in North Africa, they were shown in the China, Burma, India, theater of war. They're shown all over the world. The majority of their purpose really was in Europe, where American troops would come in and liberate a country, and they would be presented. But of course, they had to be presented in the they were made in English, but they had to be presented in whatever language people spoke. When we were researching the film, we often couldn't find an English language version of the movies because that wasn't their point. They weren't meant to be made in English. So we've got, you know, versions of films in Slovenian or Turkish that we found that are what exist from this magnificent body of work.
And what was their effect, and how do you figure out what their effect was?
Well, that's a great question. I mean, first of all, how do you find out what the effect of a 10-minute short film that might have been shown before a feature film was on a resident of a liberated country in 1943 or 44 or 45? It's awfully hard. But and making this documentary, my filmmaking partners, and this was made by a wonderful team, both in Germany, where the project my filmmaking partners began in Berlin with this idea and then found me and we teamed up to do it. They were able to track down some people in Berlin who were kids when they watched these movies, and some people in France, in Normandy, who were kids when they watched these movies. And these are folks who are now in their 80s who remember 70 years later going to the movie theater and seeing these films, you know, flickering to life. And they left a really lasting impression on the older people who we talked to who were very young back then who saw these. And I think that that was true across the audiences who saw these. I think that they put into people's minds that America was an interesting place, that it was a diverse place, that it was a culturally rich place, and that it wasn't just the soldiers who came in with tanks and bombers and weapons, that America were actually... You know, the Americans were interesting and worth knowing about, and this was a moment when America was going to really transform itself on the world stage. So this was a chance to try to explain ourselves.
And one of the things we tried to explain, which is again interesting in the context of what we're going through today with the Black Lives Matter movement and so on, but the one of the things that these films tried to show was that we had at least an attempt at racial equality.
Well, this was a terrible time in American racial history. Not that there's ever been all that many good times, but this was a time when we fought a war against, you know, racist dictatorship with a segregated army. During World War II, the U.S. forces were still segregated black and white. And this was a point of shame for Americans overseas, but it was politically very difficult to change that. And the people who are making these movies found a way to very gently put into these films about America scenes of integration. So you'll have a film about people voting or people going to work or people dropping their kids off at a daycare center or people dancing together, and you'll have blacks and whites in the same scene, which may have been a little optimistic, but that's a healthy kind of optimistic. And my beloved filmmaking partner, Amy Linton, who edited this movie, you know, dug through these movies and found these scenes, and you see a pattern, and you know that there's a purpose behind that message.
We're talking to Peter Miller about the film Projections of America. Near the beginning of the film, there's a German man, an older German man, who survived the war, suffered quite a lot, it seems, and he remembers these films very distinctly. And one of the things he said that was so striking was that the films made him feel that Americans were raised in a substantially freer way than he was. They were more free. And it makes you really think about what that particular brand of American freedom is, whether it's a myth, what part of it is real. Did you think about that when you were watching the films and making the documentary?
This is a great question, because there is, you know, I've got this older guy who says, I saw these films and I realized America was much freer than we were. And I think, well, that's true. You were living in Nazi Germany, you know, which is the least free place that has ever been. But it's not to say that America enjoyed, and freedom is such a loaded word, but not to say that American freedom was some sort of beautiful panacea back then. This is a racially segregated society, an economically very difficult place to be for millions of Americans. There's all sorts of stuff that doesn't lend to freedom in American life. And yet, as media makers, the filmmakers who made these movies, who are trying to win a war and trying to win hearts and minds, we're also trying to gently nudge America in the right direction and maybe thinking about what a vision of freedom might be. And that might be the freedom to study and the freedom to be in an integrated society and the freedom to change minds. And I think it's fraught when we use words like, America is more free. But it's a matter of how do we present what that freedom would be and what kind of country we should be. And really, as I look at right now, how do we present ourselves right now? What do people think of this country? Do they think that we're a country of military belligerence and intolerance and bigotry and noise and bad television? Or are we a country that has the possibility of a better vision of freedom and equality and diversity and the things that I value? I think watching what people tried to do 70 years ago to explain who we were in a thoughtful and progressive and nuanced way, it in some ways inspires us now to think, how do we present ourselves now? What does the world think of us, and what should they think of us, and how can we guide that discussion and also guide our country into a better place?
Yeah, I mean, what is the media being made today that's trying to nudge us in a better direction? I mean, it does. I like films that or books or any kind of artistic expression that reminds us of this time in our history, namely World War II, in which everybody believed in the war effort in a way that was so heartfelt and so kind of impossible for the post-Vietnam generation to even imagine. I mean, the world, one world ended after World War II, and the people who remember that, think about the liberation on the Normandy beaches and people who weren't yet born and who lived through Vietnam and all the other crazy wars since then, find it hard to even have that kind of belief in our country, I think.
And that's it is a shame. We've lived through in the last decade or two or three a whole lot of wars where they are being fought kind of in a vacuum where they don't affect our everyday life, and people are dying and people are sacrificing in all sorts of ways, and we just go about our business. World War II was an astonishing time in American life because there was this sense of purpose. I mean, it was the worst and most awful event in human history. Tens of millions of people died and lives were destroyed, and even a good war, if you can call it that, was fought in horrible ways on all sides. I mean, we did terrible things, and terrible things were done to us, but there was a sense of purpose and unity. And yet, within the sense of purpose and unity, there were divisions. There were people who, there were Republicans trying to shut down Franklin Roosevelt's filmmaking team. There were, it was not as if there was somehow total unity. There was still segregated armed forces, and there were people who wanted to keep it that way. And there were still struggles to be won. The vision that Robert Riskin and his team put forward, to me, say that, yes, even at a time when we are united as a country around a great war, there's still a point in trying to push that country to be better and to live up to its values and to live up to what it's supposed to be doing.
So these films played a role in the acceptance of the United States in both France and Germany. And one of the films that apparently was particularly popular was called The Autobiography of a Jeep. Tell us a little bit about that one.
The Autobiography of a Jeep is a first-person, it's about 9 minutes long, it's a first-person account of the life of the Jeep, told by the Jeep itself. And it's witty and it's cute and it's funny and this Jeep is self-effacing and self-deprecating and basically says, you know, I look like a beetle. You know, he was expecting to be some glamorous, you know, sedan with beautiful lines, and sort of tells its story. That film, for whatever reason, was extremely popular, seen by tens of millions of people around the world and throughout Europe, and it got to the point where it was so popular in French theaters that whenever they would screen it, the audiences would shout, "Vive le Jeep!" I mean, it just worked.
Yeah, and it seems like, on some level, that Jeep personified a certain piece of the American spirit.
That it did, and I guess that was what was so effective about it. You know, this was a film that was directed by a filmmaker named Joseph Krumgold, Irving Lerner directed. Joseph Krumgold wrote it. Both of these people ended up being, I think, swept up in Hollywood blacklists later. I mean, here they are personifying the American spirit, and yet after the war, the producer of the film is cut out of filmmaking because his views are too progressive. But it's a lovely film, and I'm hoping that when this film gets out there in the world, that this series of films, including that one, get to be seen, because they're really good.
Well, that's what I was going to ask you. I want to see them. Where can you see these films?
Well, we are planning to get this movie shown on TV and released on video, and when it does, we're hoping to take these new prints that we made of the films and distribute them along with Projections of America. Right now, you can watch some kind of cruddy versions of a handful of them on YouTube. You know, they exist out there, but they don't exist as a series anywhere yet, but we're working on that.
Peter Miller is director of the film Projections of America, which screens as part of the Santa Fe Film Festival on Saturday the 5th of December at 4 o'clock at the Center for Contemporary Arts here in Santa Fe, and you will be here at the screening.
I'm deeply looking forward to it. This will be my second visit to the Santa Fe Film Festival. I was there almost a decade ago with my film Sacco and Vanzetti.
Yeah, and we had you on the air, I think.
We did indeed, and I remember the Radio Cafe as being a great place. We had a fabulous conversation about that movie, and I'm so happy to be coming back out to Santa Fe to show this movie and enjoy it with an audience and partake of the beauty and the great cuisine of your fine city.
Yes, indeed. Well, Peter Miller, thank you so much for being with us on the Radio Cafe.
It's a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to the podcast. To support the program, you can go to radiocafe.org. Many thanks to StudioX.com for their technical support and web design.